food depot, and they said, no, not the food depot, it's Foodland. So on the way to Santa Rosa, I stopped at the Foodland, and they didn't know what I was talking about. So I had to drive up to Agnes's, and it was Food Depot. So I was able to call and get a hold of the manager, and the money was gotten there, and everything was fine. But look at the hours, not hours, the minutes, seemed like I was seeing. The miles that I spent trying to straighten it out, because someone gave me wrong information about what it was. And I knew, I thought it was the Food Depot, but then I was deterred by this person that was supposed to know, you know. So this can happen easily, but at the same time, if we can cut it down, we're going to take an awful lot of strain off of the skin.
A point you brought up, I wanted to make a comment on to see if, you know, understand your point. But I think what you're saying is we tend to foster a negative image on certain people and continue it, and then they cannot in any way, there's no way for them to be anything but negative. And I think we reinforce this and reinforce this. And one thing I don't think we do enough is when a person does the slightest thing that seems positive, they notice now that you have to compliment children even though they're doing nothing. If they're not doing something bad, you have to reinforce anything that's going toward the right direction. And I don't think we show people how to go. We just keep saying, oh, you've done it again, you've done it again. Yeah, I think we're all guilty.
Want to nurture.
Right. Yeah, right. And I think Marcy could have a lot to say in terms of showing us this technique. It's in a way, because we don't know how to do it naturally, we may even have to start to do it almost as if a technique. And maybe there's some readings you can suggest for people to read some of these things, because I don't think people know.
Well, I haven't always known it, and there are a lot of things I still don't know, but I am trying to fix a corner of my room where I have all my nursing books and everything there that will be available to community people that are in areas of health and interested. You can't take them out of there. You just mark what you want, and I'll take them all with you and copies of whatever you want. Okay? And you're welcome. You're welcome to any of that kind of thing. And any information I have, I'm just happy, you know, to pass on to you. But Agnes came to me almost years ago and said, Mother, they're holding my past against me, and I didn't believe it. I'm guilty. I couldn't believe it. I could not believe it about this council. I could not believe it. And I walked in, and in 2 days, I found out. Now, it may not be in here, but there was something happening. There was something happening there. How that girl functioned as well as she did, I don't know. And I mean, this is a child. They told me she had an IQ of 69, and not to adopt her. We found her when she was 10. She was taking care of her little cousin, and one of them had gotten out and frozen their feet. And the police were out there. And so we were there. It was in the neighborhood where Jim and I had a church. And we took her, we called her mother, and her mother didn't even know me, but she let me take her home. This was the first rejection. And by Sunday, she signed the adoption papers, and she didn't even know me. The mother didn't know me. So imagine their rejection that in itself. And then we took her for testing, and they said her IQ is 69. She stuttered so badly she couldn't talk. She was in second grade, she couldn't read. And they said, don't adopt her. And Jim and I could not disappoint her, so we adopted her. And I took her to remedial reading. I took her to speech therapist. I was really beating the road with Agnes. We had a hard time though because she was 10 years old. She had no discipline, and I had to become a policeman. And it was hard for Agnes to believe that I loved her because I didn't have all the time for all the children. So when she was about 14, she decided she wanted to go with her real mother. And so Jim and I let her go. And we said, now, if you'll stay in the same neighborhood, so she's going to the same school, because the principal school was Catherine Irwin, who was a black woman, and they were really trying to get to go to our church, and they were really trying to help Agnes. And so we let them get an apartment in that area, because I knew
was kept Amos from her mother against her will, that she'd never be satisfied, you know? So it wasn't long until her mother left, she tied to Cleveland with Agnes. And the next thing I knew, they were in New York, and she'd gone to the New York Welfare Department with Agnes for aid. And there was two choices. She was legally our child. We would either be gotten for child neglect, she would be gotten for kidnapping. She was in the state of New York with Agnes. And so we got a hold of her, and Jen and I got in the car. She headed back on the bus to Cleveland with Agnes. And I was so sick that Jen had to stop and put me in a hotel room because I couldn't go on with the trip, and hit off that bus before the authorities picked up Agnes and brought her back home. She never wanted to leave Jen. So we went all through the teams with her, and it was policing her. She had no training. And at one time it was so bad they told us we could put her in the girls' school in Indianapolis, and Jim said, no way will I put her in the girls' school. She went ahead and she had her children. And the next time I knew of her mother, she was pregnant with Billy. And so her mother came around and Agnes was in labor, and her mother said, well, all Agnes, the first husband Agnes had four other children, and one was a spinal bifida, and Agnes took care of this child. Agnes was 18 years of age. She took care of this spinal bifida, helpless child, and loved her. And Agnes was in labor, and so her mother said, well, I'll come in and take care of the children, and then tell her the mother was. And I thought, well, if she'll do that for Agnes, she hasn't done anything, and I'm in the hospital with Agnes. So she took Agnes's linen to the laundry, left it all there, and it was all stolen. So I had to get all the linen replaced. She wasn't there any time. She said, I can't stay and take care of the children anymore. She's not to be blamed. She'd had no training before. This was the last episode we had with Agnes's mother. So then when Agnes came out here, you know, and she came back up a few years ago, she was sent away again. And then she realized what she really had in the family. She brought Ray back with her children. And she's been crying very, very, very hard. She didn't know all that about Agnes. I want to tell you a quick story about Agnes. She was about 17. We had Stephanie, our little girl that was killed, a little Korean girl. She was 4 years of age. And Agnes took her to see Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. Stephanie could barely speak English enough to come home to sleep. Agnes smoked. And I didn't smoke. Stephanie said, Agnes smoke! Oh, I was just talking. Finally, Agnes said, well, I took a couple puffs of a cigarette. And I said, well, if you eat a bite of chocolate, you're eating chocolate. If you take a couple puffs of a cigarette, you're smoking. So I knew that I didn't dare spank Agnes because it would make her so rebellious. She's about 17. But I couldn't let her get by with this because Stephanie, she'd lie, she'd smoke, she'd done all these horrible things, you know. So we lived in a two-story house. So I took Agnes upstairs and I said, I went into my bedroom and I said, now you scream. And I used to bed. Well, Agnes did. And Stephanie was downstairs singing Agnes was really good. I've often wondered if Stephanie knows I did that now. If she went on to the great beyond, wherever that is, or if there is anything. But one thing Agnes never did was smoke. She never did smoke. And had I been there, she probably would have. Okay, is there anything else?
I have something that won't take too long. I talked to you earlier about Tommy going to with Joyce Touche, and Jim said at first definitely not. Then he said it might be good. But he said, well, he'll leave it in your hands. So I talked to you and you said definitely not under circumstances. In the meantime, Jack came back and said that he felt that I should talk to you again in front of council tonight. Personally, I don't want to part with Tommy, but if it's the best thing for him, you know, well, then
I'll tell you the reason that I said no, under no circumstances should he go. He's going over there with his father. We don't know where his father is as far as this cause is concerned. He has remarked that he will not live communally. He could take off with Tommy from there, and we never know where he was. So we could not let Tommy go over with his father. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Okay. But this is what Jack said. He said, if
I don't think we need to talk anymore about what Jack said. Because it's settled, you know, what Dad said doesn't matter. It's too much of a conflict.
That's right.
His passion over something he was also wanting to know what Dad said and what everybody else said, because he wanted to make sure that we look good. You know, I want you to look good.
Could have it available too.
I think it's a good idea. That, but I certainly wouldn't go into anything without taking for him.
especially these cases, Marceline, where there is a history of problems, it seems to me once in a while you should have some kind of file that you could listen to tapes and see what you've done and what's happened to the person, and then Marceline could know those things too, or
and also I think it'd be a good idea to call, if you're in a counseling situation where you really don't know the background, it would be good to call someone who you think would know the background. I mean, not just anyone in the group, because they might think that was sort of a backhanded way, but I mean someone, if there is someone that knows the person better who is in the PC, then they should be called and asked any background information, which I know it takes more time, but probably would be more thorough.
Would you have any suggestions, Marceline, on information gathering, even in counseling? Do you think that they should have some questions that they know to ask? Or, because I wonder if they get a depth enough understanding of this is a matter.
Well, you know, first, you know, definitely you got to know what the problem is. You got to know something about the people's background, you know.
Maybe they should have a little where they sheet that they fill out. What is the problem?
Yeah, then maybe the tips can be found out in your counselor. They may be a little embarrassed a lot. You have to, you know, it's awful hard to fill out a form and get the right information. You can ask the lead questions in your counselor, you know. Don't be in such a hurry to solve a counseling problem. Take a little time. And I know you take a lot of time, but it seems to me it's been an awful lot of time spent unnecessarily. One thing, you're just batting your heads against the wall because you're not going around about it right. I'm sorry.
I was just thinking, Marceline, of when we interview clients.
I haven't even been in there. This isn't quite. I've only seen the results of the counselor. I've not been there. But after this happened to me Wednesday night, and then Friday I was around, and I've been gone. You know, I left. Last Tuesday, got in Friday night just long enough to spend Jim get on the bus. I left Monday before he got in and got back Wednesday just in time to see him get on the bus. So I'm gone. I'm going to be gone all this next week. And for me to be able to plug into this many problems in 2 days,
really difficult.
Don't you wonder how many problems there are I haven't plugged into? And I wonder how Jim has kept this marvelous organization afloat. And I know he's aware of all this, but he's all busy trying to put out fires all the time.
Sure.
And your people have been helpful in so many ways. But your job is going to be easier. It's going to be more gratifying. You're really going to see things happen with people. That's what we're here for.
I noticed that when I had the communication group and dealt with some of the same people you were dealing with. For one thing, I don't think you should come in and just say, okay, what is the problem? Let's get to it. I think you have to learn to ask some questions to put a person at ease or draw them out a little on non...
Okay, the first thing you do, you're going to know what the problem is before they get in there.
Yeah.
And you're going to say, now, this is what I understand your problem to be. And if that's not what their problem is, then you're giving them a chance to write it.
Yeah.
You know. That's the first thing. Right there, you're giving them a chance to tell you what the problem is, and if they see it, okay? And then you go from there.
And you should always talk about it before you bring the person in. Because you start cold.
One of the biggest problems with the counseling, we have very good, I feel, you know, some people that really counsel well, but we don't have enough. I set up a man who was very hostile, been wanting to get into counsel for a long time because of emergencies. I had to put him off. I get him in at 8 o'clock. There's 4 white women there.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know how I feel about that?
That's horrible.
I spend hours setting it up. I type out stuff for you. I talk stuff to you, and I have to tell it 5 times because by the time I start, there's 5 people dribbling one at a time, and then they go, well, what's going on? And they get all upset.
This is horrible.
I had 4 white women one day. And I had to bring him back at 11 o'clock, and I'm not going to mention the person not because he's not here, but the person that we needed in there says, well, I have to clean up and take a shower. That made me hostile. He said he'd be there in 45 minutes and lived in Redwood Valley. And, I mean, it's just, I think it's ridiculous.
The punctuality
problem. Black men.
Yeah, we lose so much time with people being late.
Well,
meetings.
I want to tell you something. I'm not really sure you people do love Dan. This is really going on, and I'm not sure you really love the cause.
Nobody called me.
You're going to have to tell me, because you have to be on PC and you're just supposed to know. And I appreciate the fact that you're here. And I'm sure some of you have legitimate reasons for this, but if this goes on all the time, there's no big reason for that. Now, there's one other thing I want to say. I don't want to hear one of you ever again tell me you hate somebody in this church. And I'll tell you why. These people in this church could be out there with a racist. Now, you can have personality differences with them. You can not like their personality. You can not like what they're doing. But if they're here, you better not hate them. And if you do, don't say it in front of me. But they could be out there with a racist kid. Well, that's all I'm going to say.
There's one council situation coming up that I think we're going to group on unless we have some expert advice, and that's Sam McGee, who wants desperately to move his mother, and we need guidance, I feel, to know whether this is a proper thing or not to take him out of his mother's house and how to deal with all this work with him. I appreciate before we meet Stanley anywhere, we know what we're doing.
Okay. And see, I know nothing. I didn't even know. See, I'm so out of it. I didn't even know where to get back to church. So see, for me, but I'll be glad to sit down and talk with you about the family meeting. I'll need to know everything. And then we'll come up with some plan.
Like some of the things like I have, some of them I feel that Jim needs to be aware of because like the mother. And I have talked to Jim about that, you know, and done so far what he's told me, but he would ask sometimes,
he asked if he could move into Wanda's home. And I didn't know how come it got that far to ask me personally and not, you know, through the counseling channel, and I'm concerned, you know, and you had said it was all right for me to leave.
His mother's drinking now,
she will not sign consent to this day now. For him to go on the trip because she wants him to go to the truck drivers back east. And I think that's why this acute information has come up with him. Because I got that information last night in about 2 seconds he came to me to see if I could do anything because I have Clifford.
A
couple of weeks ago we were
A couple of weeks ago we were talking to Jim about the Jew boys being out of service all the time and Stanley being maybe debating whether to go back with his mother or, you know, continue church. And Jim said, under those circumstances, don't encourage them to come to service because they take information out of them. So that's his.
We all get different things, and that's why I'm saying this is a big thing that we can't do for him. Be in one body. We all have different things.
And family, you just one very, very quick session. Mm-hmm. I hope I can trust you people with this information that I'm giving you. I hope you won't go out and I'm treating you as people that would not go out and say, Sam McGee has a sick background to someone out there. Your people that Jim has chosen as his planning commission. If you do, you want me to be honest. But it's something you do have. He's Stanley only by the grace of God has any semblance of sanity right now. I'm talking about God and Jim Jones. And so we're going to have to handle him very carefully. He's the boy that defecated in one of the things. Okay.
Another thing too, maybe some of you are having problems with some of the young people and you're not, you know, involved in counseling a lot. We are keeping, you know, a file of things that we've counseled them about, you know, and stuff. Sometimes we find out, you know, what they say anyway, what they really want, stuff like that. And we do know a lot about some of the people in the background. You know, I don't think I can sit here honestly and say that and cop out on the fact that I have known a lot of people because I know I know some of that.
But there's one thing to know something about the background, there's another thing to know what to do with it. And when I was 24, I didn't know what to do with anybody's background. And I don't know everything to do with their backgrounds now, so if I can hold up and I can be around, you know, just a few minutes, I'll try to help them.
I don't think people though should weigh on Marston. I think you should get your information all set up.
If you have
and,
information,
maybe Grace could coordinate it.
If all the information can be available, then we can sit down in about 10 minutes and talk about the thing.
If you could go to Grace and tell her the situation that you think Marcelin should be, we could advise on, then she could get you and then Marcelin and arrange it with you.
Okay.
So that, because each person wouldn't have to go to you. They could
yeah,
go to
right.
her. She could set it up with you. And then the person that's involved should be there.
Yeah.
But that way you wouldn't have 59
yeah,
people
good.
Coming up to you.
Yeah.
That's right.
It should be kind of...
Nor do I think
you have the information. When you get every bit of information.
Even if you have to make home visits, by the way, that wouldn't be a bad idea for a couple sometimes to just go by casually and sort of feel what the atmosphere is at home. You might get a perspective of what the child's going through. But I was going to say, too, don't expect Marcelin to have the solution to every problem either, because it's
well,
just the way you cannot...
Well, I don't have to.
Well, it's too heavy, problem. I'm sure you...
I know, but with Joyce was in going, when you help Wincy and I, and then it's like she's changed, you know, her attitude.
But that's too much for every problem.
Well, I'll tell you about George's ankle. It's another thing. So, left out, you know, just everything. And of course, she said something that she's made me believe. Well, I guess I'll never be anything but a nursing home. What made you think these old people don't need Christmas?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, to make a long story short, I enrolled her and both Lois into a workshop in Santa Rosa in activities between, you know, it's on a plane, it's a one-day workshop, and I'm going to be there too. But we've got a physical therapist in the state that is on crutches himself, and he's really a tremendous man, you know, and he's just an OT man, person. I realized that her and Lois had been kind of out, stuck and out of it, not able to get out and learn more things. And so I think it's helped her, you know, come in and take the workshop and put more of the nurses into these workshops. Of course, I could do it with her because they have to work in a nursing home in the area. Both of them do, so they do all the staff nurses at nursing homes.
You know, whenever you're going to San Francisco, if you could stop by their hospital, they really appreciate it because they feel like they're stuck out there all
yeah.
by themselves. And I know that, you know, we counsel with them. You know, we go down there about twice a month now because of the problems they're having. And I told her myself, you know, I would stop by, and she just thought that's a bunch of BS, you know, because she thinks we're all busy. But she so appreciated anybody coming down there just to stop by for 5 minutes and talk to her, you know, if you're in San Francisco. She really feels left out down there. She's young, also does not join in nursing. But I know she's been staying out in the office in LA.
Okay, now let me answer that question. The nursing staff's not to do that much. I assume this is one of the problems of Joyce and Lois. They were told not to get in on the thing, and then Sharon has been doing it. We're going to have to get her out. Kim does not want the professional nurses to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's too much at stake. Their life is too at stake. If they can go after Jim for malpractice or anything like that, he wants non-professional people to do it. Okay? Do you understand what I said? So
this is a beautiful lesson.
For their protection.
He does not want them, their life to ever be in jeopardy. See, another thing can go out and do something. And if she does something wrong with the RN's license, then, you know, a nurse's aide has nothing to lose. They're not... So a non-professional person can go out and give a diet, and they have nothing to lose. If you send one of our RN's out, and they get Jim up on the carpet, her license could be gone. So that's why Jim did that. Okay, so don't put these professional nurses out there.
Stand up or something.
I have such a great education. Everybody has people that can
stand up, Laura. We're talking
to you. I have such patience. I'm such a coordinator. Everybody has people.
I'm not saying you, you know, I don't know who has come back, you know.